Good day or night. It's the Nerdist Podcast number 291. This week, I'm going to perform in Nashville, and then the following week, Chicago, December 6th through 9th at Zany's in Nashville, and then the following weekend at Zany's in Chicago. I'm going to be working on the new hour of material. So come watch me work out some material and get some jokes. It'll be fine. I know it sounds not fun to watch people work out material, but it'll be fun. And I would like to thank Stamps.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. It's the holidays, if you haven't noticed, unless you're a bad noticer or a Grinch. Although even the Grinch noticed the holidays, he just wanted to shit on them. But why spend all of your time in the post office mailing packages? If you go to Stamps.com, you can avoid all the hassle of going to the post office during the busy holiday season. Everything you need to do that you would do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. You can buy and print official U.S. postage. You can print postage for any letter or package the instant you need it. And then the mailman picks it up, because that's his job. And hopefully he smiles at you. Make sure and give him liquor or money. Maybe money. Maybe he'll want to buy liquor with the money. I don't know. Whatever you put in there, I'm sure he will appreciate it. So don't forget to hug your mailman this holiday season. But right now, Stamps.com is giving you a special offer. When you use the promo code Nerdist, a no-risk trial, $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and up to $55 of free postage. So go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Nerdist. That's Stamps.com and enter the promo code Nerdist. And this episode is Ron Perlman, or should I say Ron fucking Perlman. He was awesome. Now, I know what a lot of people are going to say, which is, how come you didn't talk more about movies that Ron Perlman was in, Chris Hardwick? Let me tell you something. Ron Perlman is a guy that you just want to hang out with. So this podcast is like what it would be like if you just hung out with Ron Perlman. It was a big hangout session. And so much fucking fun. I enjoy him. So here is the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 291 with Ron Perlman. Movie voice.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
It's good to have you on, man. You're one of those guys that we've been wanting to get on for a long time, and I wasn't sure if it was ever going to happen. And
all of a sudden, you got to do is ask, man.
I know, but I feel like
everybody says that.
Do they really?
Yeah. You know, I wanted you in my movies. And Jesus, I don't remember you asking. Well, is that all it took? Well, shit. What was I thinking?
We could just keep it simple. We'll just keep it simple.
No, keep it complicated. You want to talk about the theory of relativity?
I would love to.
How about those enriched uranium rods?
Yes.
That are in Iran.
Let's talk about the theory
How
of relativity.
About the fact that they're at 5%.
Shit.
How about the fact that the GDP is at 5%? No, it isn't. let me not ramble.
Please ramble. This is a perfect rambling place for you.
Let me not ramble, because once I get rambling,
then it's all over.
It's all uphill. And it's hard to ramble uphill.
I saw you at a karaoke bar several years ago.
Wow. Was it in Koreatown?
It was in Brass Monkey.
The Brass Monkey. It used to be a regular haunt of mine.
It was a good place, and then it got overrun by hipsters, and then
well, what happened to me was the guy who was the DJ there, and his name will come popping into my head.
Was it Luke?
Probably Luke.
I remember Luke.
You know, he was like,
This is Matt.
Hello, Ron. Big fan.
We were just talking about
you. I'm sorry.
We just sat down.
It's the first time Chris has ever been early.
We were just talking about you.
No, this is my fault. This is my fault. This is not your fault. Ron was just, the first time I saw Ron was at the Brass Monkey in Koreatown. So you're just telling a story about Luke, the guy who was the DJ there.
Oh, yeah, boy. He, you know, everything was on his MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, yeah, all I ever do in karaoke bars is Sinatra. All I ever did in karaoke bars.
That's what I remember.
I still sing. Well, I never could sing. Let's fucking face it. But I would get drunk enough and think I could sing, like most people in karaoke bars. And all I did was Sinatra. I just covered Sinatra. And Luke had the most esoteric collection of Sinatra songs. I mean, he didn't have, of course he had, you know, the five, you know, national anthems, My Way and New York, New York, and, yeah, you know, all that, I Got You Under My Skin. But he had shit that only real Sinatra files would know. And it was a kind of a dream for me. And then one Monday night, because there was never a night, I never had a particular night where I went in there. I just went in there randomly. So on a Monday night, I saw Seth MacFarlane in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was covering only Sinatra songs. And it got to be sort of like a sick, twisted Sinatra off.
I was there that night. That is the night I saw you there. Seth was also there doing Sinatra. I saw you. I went to the bathroom and I came back. And then there's Ron Perlman sitting on a stool, just leaning into the microphone,
was
singing.
Was this in the bathroom? Or?
No.
Whose stool was I sitting on?
Some random. It's not important whose it was.
Hopefully yours.
I bent over the bar and someone pushed in my stool. The guy who actually took me to the Brass Monkey told me that joke originally. So
this all ties together.
It's funny how life just goes around and comes around.
It's so serendipitous. You sang Witchcraft. You sang Witchcraft.
It was a Monday night, so you had a chance. You know, if you went there on later in the week, like Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, if you got one song, mm-hmm, because this was the most traveled karaoke bar probably in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'd get there at 6 o'clock at night and put your order in, and you were lucky if they got to you by 11.
Yeah.
And forget about doing a couple of numbers.
No.
Anyway, on this one Monday night, it was slow enough so that Seth got to do like five or six, and I got to do like five or six. And we got to be, we all started with like the boilerplate Sinatra, and then got more and more obscure and like cutting edge Sinatra as well. How about this one, motherfucker? You know?
A Frank off.
Yeah, so we had a Sinatra off. And when I remind Seth of that, he has no recollection. But you're here, Chris, to tell me that it actually happened.
It was a wonderful... It was one of those experiences where you're like, I can't believe this is actually happening. They're going up one after time. And Seth, who at that point, obviously, you know, people were certainly aware of Seth, but he wasn't... He was just start like Family Guy was relatively new, and right, he wasn't the juggernaut that he is, you know, that ended up becoming. And so
he only had like 10 million.
He only had like 10 million instead of hundreds. And so, but it still was, you know, because Seth shows up in the black jacket and the open collared shirt, and he's all ring a ding ding.
He was ring a ding ding, all right. And you know, I knew that I was winning when I would watch him take the mic from me, and you know, see how big a scowl he had on his face was as he said, "Thanks, Ron." I had him. I had that motherfucker. And then I saw him in live with like a 60-piece orchestra. So I mean, that's like you say, it was the beginning. Seth was just emerging on the night when we were all together. But some years later, he became like, you know, he actually Harry Connick'd out. I mean, he became the walking incarnation of Frank.
He boobled a little bit.
Nah, you know, I can't even afford to go to Koreatown anymore because all I do is basic cable.
Tell me about it.
I have to. My karaoke is now in Thai Town, you know, which is like a poor man's career.
You actually have to.
I can't even afford Koreatown.
You've been assigned to a different karaoke district based on your
FX
income.
Network cheap motherfuckers.
Hey, it's Ron's agent. We're gonna have to get his numbers up. We need to get that guy back into Koreatown. Yeah, the show's doing well, but not Brass Monkey well.
Listen, we need to retain Louis, so he's gonna have to stay in Thai Town a little longer.
Louis doesn't even like karaoke. He shouldn't be allowed to go in there. I love the karaoke group. I had a great group, and we went for a couple years, and then slowly people started getting married and families, and they just sort of, and then it got more crowded, and it sort of lost its fun.
Well, anyway, I think some new management took over at the Brass Monkey Or the old manager got up on his high horse and, you know, got in Luke's face, and Luke ended up walking away from the place.
Oh.
And I have not been back since.
We moved to Sardo's in Burbank for a while.
That's where Luke went.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Sardo's in Burbank for a few times, but then my career as a karaoke lounge act, you know, just came dashing against the rocks.
At any point?
At warp speed.
and
I'm lucky I have my back teeth.
At some point, I really think it would be amazing to go full Hellboy makeup, go to Sardo's, and sing some Sinatra songs.
Don't think that is that far-fetched, my friend.
Because
if you follow the internet,
he did
I'm
it
pretty
for the
sure
kid. I know he did it for the Make-A-Wish kid.
Amazing.
I'll put the Hellboy shit on at the drop of a hat, man.
Oh, my God. We've got to
shoot.
All right,
start making kids that aren't dying feel good.
That I cannot do.
Excellent.
That's way, way outside
excellent,
my pay
excellent
grade.
Contribution, so. Myra.
You're welcome.
I think that would be fucking awesome to get. That would be a fun thing to do. Maybe before Pat.
For on the record, if I ever get diagnosed terminal anything, I want him in the Beast makeup.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Not a lot of people ask for that anymore. Grandmothers. Women with
Linda Hamilton.
Women with
Linda still asks.
Yeah.
Linda. I was such a hit with grandmothers and you know.
My mother was a huge fan.
The Beast.
The grandmas, well, they wanted all the ladies wanted the Beast to swoop in, and
not all the ladies, no,
no,
no. The young the young ladies wanted Spider-Man or somebody young and nubile.
Well, that was you
I
know.
Really,
what?
I was like, you know, I should have been doing Geritol commercials
as Beast.
As the Beast,
my joints aren't what they used to be. I you were on
ever since that curse got put on.
Don't let
turn me into a beast and ruin my joints.
Well, you were on like that was a right around 21 Jump Street time, so that was like that was like Depp. Depp was on one of the other channels.
That's right. That's where all the young it's all young chicks.
When you because I always wonder, you know, you get a job like that, you're like, this is great. We're gonna do like 50, 60 episodes of the show. I have a job. That's regular work. And then you know, like season two, hour 4,000 of that makeup. Are you like what? What did I do?
Yeah, but, in all seriousness, and I promised myself I would never be serious again.
You're breaking a promise.
So just bear with me. This won't take long.
Okay. But, we'll take it down.
It was the first time in my life I ever made a buck. I mean, I was outside the fringes. That's how obscure my career was prior to Beauty and the Beast. So, the fact that here I was on primetime CBS, you know, Friday night, 8 o'clock, right in, you know, the most commercial spot in the universe was such a novelty to me because I never ever thought that, you know, I would ever do anything that was, you know, like a fastball down the middle, you know, mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And coupled with the fact that I truly, truly revered the role that I was playing. I loved the way the Beast was conceived by Mr. Coslow and felt very lucky. So there was never a twinge of that this is burdensome in any way. This was almost like the opposite of that. It was almost like this. And strangely enough, the same with Hellboy. You know, the character was, you know, I just kept saying to myself, there's millions of people on the planet that wish they were me right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the minor annoyances of a 4.5-hour makeup job, shit, you know, there's a whole lot of tougher ways to make a living.
No, I guess that's
just
true.
Just ask any school teacher or coal miner.
But you're stuck in that chair for so long.
Yeah, and it's like the makeup, you sweat it a lot, and it gets in your eyes, and the contacts sting.
Yeah, fuck that shit. Yeah, I'm not
gonna We convinced him. It's terrible.
Well, there was going to be a Hellboy 3 probably, but not now.
Not anymore.
Perlman's out. When did you meet Guillermo? Because you were in Kronos.
Guillermo, yeah, well, that was his first film, and that was my, of course, introduction to him, and that was in like 1992.
Mm-hmm.
I had a kind of a sense just from being in his presence that I was in the presence of something that was kind of special and unique. And I didn't want to overblow it because, you know, I was so wired and still am wired for failure. So I said, you know, this can't turn out well, but this guy's rather interesting. He has a rather interesting lens through which he's looking at the world, and definitely through which he's you know, making these amazing visuals. You know, like they say at the end of Casablanca, that was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Really beautiful friendship.
We've now done 5. Just finished Pacific Rim, which comes out next summer. And, I just marvel at the fact that he's still speaking to me. After all the cheap shots I've taken in his movies.
But you guys have been friends for so long.
I single-handedly almost ruined the guy. But
Pan's Labyrinth, more like Ass Labyrinth. I'm imagining
no,
that would be.
I wasn't in that.
No, I know. That's why you would take a shot at it.
No, of course. That was a masterpiece.
When you were a kid, did you start acting like how far into your adolescence were you like, this, I want to do this acting thing?
Well, it's a kind of a hackneyed story simply because I've told it so often, but I'll tell it to you again because, you obviously didn't see me on The View that day.
I missed it.
Yeah, but...
I usually check in just to see what Hasselbeck says.
Me too, man, me too. Of course, you know, she's the one conservative on the show, unlike that Whoopi Goldberg.
Like that Whoopi Goldberg.
How about that tape, that Romney tape? Can I electioneer? Am I too close to the polls to be electioneering right now?
No, go for it. It's probably not going to be decided by the time it airs. Yeah, Florida, they had some hangy things, and the software's not working in Philly.
And Ohio and Pennsylvania now. Yeah, you're black. You can't vote.
I am black.
Where was? No one knows that because Chris, because you just refuse to emerge from the internet.
No, I'm very light skinned.
Every morning with this guy.
Yeah, so you know from whence I speak.
I wanted to see what it was like to live in the body of a white man. It's pretty great. I got to be honest. We have it pretty easy.
The perks, right?
Yeah,
the perks are fucking.
We have it pretty.
Roof, man,
we have it
roof.
Pretty easy. I got to say,
uh-huh.
It's kind of a cakewalk. It's not fair, yeah. Really. It's not fair.
But anyway.
What's the hackneyed story?
There's got to be a... Oh, yes, there was a hackneyed story. So I'm on the swimming team in high school, and the whistle blows, and my swimming coach is standing there with a rather well-dressed, very tall, very effete, very handsome fellow who happens to be the head of the drama department.
Okay.
Makes sense, right? He had the best wardrobe in this public high school. Perlman, get out of the pool. You're going to go audition with this guy.
He pulled out of the pool to go audition.
Why me, coach? Why me? Well, because, you know, they need, you know, they have an auditions for the school play, and they had 45 girls show up and no boys. And so, you know, he's going around trying to, and I said, well, yeah, but what does that have to do with me? And he says, well, are you going to really actually make me say this? I said, say what? He goes, maybe you can do the drama department a little bit more good than you're doing the swimming team.
Oh, shit.
Oh, coach.
And I said, after I got finished saying, oh, coach. Oh, coach.
What are you doing?
That was like, you know, you just Sandusky'd me.
Before that's even
well, at
a
least
thing.
Pull people out of the pool for other things.
So,
well played, Myra.
Where was I? Oh, yeah, so anyway, I said, well, what happens if I don't get a role in the play? He says, you can come back and be third string swimming team. No problem. There's always a place for you on the bench. And I said, thanks. And so I got the lead in the play, of course, because I was the only guy that they were able to actually talk into auditioning. And, you know, your chances are pretty good if you're the only one that you're going to get the male role.
That actually does simultaneously make you the best and worst in the play.
Mm-hmm. And I never looked back, man. It was just, I did the next play and the next play and the next play, and that took me all through high school and then 4 years of college and then 2 more years of grad school. And by the time I got my master's degree, which is covering up a hole in my bathroom wall that I punched,
I'll put this master's here.
That's what I'll do with that master's degree.
What a perfect thing to cover a rage hole.
I knew it was going to come in handy. I had done 8 years of stage, you know, and then went to New York and put on my walking shoes.
What did you expect? What was the career?
I expected great things.
You must have. Well, you wouldn't have done it.
I was so disappointed.
No, but you wouldn't have done it if you didn't think you had a shot at it, though, right?
I do a lot of things, Chris.
That's true, man.
That could have been me speaking right there. Actually, I didn't have any choice. I mean, I had zero aptitude at anything. There was nothing. I had to find something that required no skill and no discipline. And so I found acting. And I'm sure that there's a lot of actors right now shutting this fucking thing down. You prick bastard. You outed me, you cocksucker.
Why are they from Boston?
Because that's where the aggressive people live.
I thought that was Romanian, actually.
Hey, you I gotta carry this cheese to my farm. Here in Romania. Oh, Vlad Tepes.
Don't go up there. That's Dracula.
Hey, fucking Dracula, you wicked queer Dracula. Dracula's a wicked queer, biting people in the neck and shit.
He bites dudes. You see that guy? Just bites him right in the neck.
Dracula.
Might as well bite him up the ass, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, high five. Let's go get a brew.
Hang on, I gotta listen to this podcast about acting.
I wanna make it. Somewhere in Romania, I'm gonna make it.
Welcome to the Riff Zone. Population us.
Oh, that was good
times. I'm sorry, Ron Perlman.
No, it's all right. You saved me, I think, because hopefully nobody will remember what I just said.
Take us back to the scene, Ron. You're in Romania.
Yes, and Vlad, somehow.
I hear he's impaling with his dick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, dudes. That's how he's...
Matt, we're over here. We're on this side of the bit now.
I don't understand.
Matt.
I'm still in it.
No, Matt, come back to us.
No. I'm talking about that guy up there fucking all them dudes. Now he's from Chicago.
Hashtag snore.
So much for mainstream. Whatever shot you thought you had at Network.
It's over.
Out the window.
No. The networks have reminded me time and again that I'm not right for them. Everything.
Oh, me too.
Me too.
The agreement is all.
I told you, man. Basic cable. It's all I can, you know.
But that's where a lot of the best television's happening. I mean, like, you know, Sons of Anarchy would never have been made on a network.
When people find that out, then, you know, it's all over for guys like me.
Why is that?
Because, you know, then the real deal guys will come down.
Oh, come on. You've been doing this way too long to have the real deal guys aren't. You're the real deal guy. Like, you're the guy now. No
Did it
one's,
sound like I was fishing right there?
Maybe a little bit. I love my dad.
Hang on. Let me get off my hands and knees right now.
Oh, this is your rod. My
Jesus Christ, I got a scab.
That's Vlad.
Vlad. That's the guy I was telling you about.
Did you hear? Now he just walked in here.
Now I'm from
mic.
New York.
I'd like to suck that blood of yours.
It's a very good Romanian accent.
The best podcast
I've been working on
ever.
I've been working on it. That's not all, mister.
So you do a lot of voiceover work.
I do a ton.
You do, actually. You were on like Teen Titans. Like, you did a bunch
of
stuff, right?
Yeah, I did Teen Titans.
Voiceover's the best.
Best.
I love it so much.
The best.
You do your work with Andrea Romano?
She's the one who gave me my start.
So many people have that story with her. She is masterful.
I mean, I walked into it was a really, really cool cartoon, and Jim Cummings played two roles. Jim Cummings is like, he's the who's who of voices, mm-hmm. and he's so anonymous and so good that nobody knows who Jim Cummings is, you know, unless you've actually, you know, traveled in that world. And then he's a giant. He's a true giant. I was called Bonkers. Mm-hmm. And Jim was playing both Bonkers and Bonkers' alter ego. And Andrea Romano was directing that for Warner Brothers. She was the house director at Warner Brothers for decades. And I walk in that room and, you know, there's Maurice LaMarche doing the greatest Orson Welles impression I've ever heard. And that there's the actual guy that they replaced the original Goofy with.
Yeah.
What's his name? Something Farmer.
Him, I don't know. I know Maurice, but I don't know.
And this guy was better at Goofy, you know, than Goofy. I mean, and I was like, I was looking for the box where I pay for the show that I just was witnessing. I mean, you know, and, it was a really cool room filled with unbelievable talent that no one will ever know the names of.
Yeah.
But pure killer talent.
Yeah, because it's all, you know, I love having voiceover people on. We've had a ton of them. Maurice has been on the show before, and Billy West, and Rob Paulson, and John DiMaggio. And they're great, you know, and because...
Paulson is just outrageous.
The range of that guy's voice is insane. That he can go, like, and all of a sudden he's up in some crazy octave. Like, how the fuck do you get up there? And it's so...
Well, clearly you don't smoke as much weed as I did, because... I've lost the top two octaves. But enough about me. Let's get back to who are we talking about?
Vlad.
Oh, Vlad. We're back in the bit.
Now, when you got the dark embrace from Vlad.
This coffin is way too small. Oh, no, that's Hungarian.
It doesn't matter. All of our accents.
I think that was Wisconsin.
I could have got... How is Wisconsin doing right now?
In the polls? I don't know.
I think they like unions again. I don't know.
I don't know what's that. They love cheese. I know that much. Cheese is in. It's in. This is a side note. I had a really embarrassing thing happen on the way over here, which was I was at a meeting, and I had the parking ticket that got validated, and I was peeing, and my phone vibrated, and I tried to multitask by pulling out the phone with my left hand, and the parking ticket flew into the toilet, dead center into the pee stream.
Well, if you're going to pick one of the things to fall into the toilet, parking ticket's the one.
But then I had to go explain to the receptionist what happened and why I had to fill out all this paperwork because I lost the parking ticket.
I would love to have been there for that explanation.
You wouldn't rather just pay the maximum daily whatever for the parking?
Oh, just to not have dealt with it?
Yeah, just to not deal with that situation.
God, I should. I normally would have paid
$20 to not do that.
I took a picture of it because it's just like...
You showed her a photograph of a thing sitting in urine?
No.
They should have arrested you.
No.
Listen, it was the rubber gloves that gave you away. You probably wanted to make a different choice.
I had these calving gloves.
Also, the thumbs up was weird. Weird choice.
The photograph is perfect because it fell perfectly in such a way that you see the validations floating in the pee. And it's just the story. I'm almost going to Instagram it, but I don't want people to see my pee. Is that weird?
If it's like really dark yellow, maybe don't.
No.
But if it's like a nice light color, go ahead. You're hydrated.
Did she say anything about insulin, or did she try to give you any kind of medical advice?
You need to drink water.
Check the salt in your diet.
I did not. There was no sodium intake discussion. I didn't show her the picture. I danced around it in the awkward fashion that I'm so good at.
So famous for.
Yeah. Sir, I'm going to give you this other ticket. It has a hydration chart for your urine.
Well,
you just match the color up to your pee.
The risk that you run is I'm like, well, does this drift into sexual harassment territory when
I start? Yeah, sure did when you showed her that picture of your pee.
That's right. And I brought her in to reenact it. Here's how it happened. Stop crying. Hold this.
No, wait. Don't hold that.
No, don't hold that.
Don't hold that.
You be the ticket.
I have to take the picture. You hold the dick.
Oh, God. It was so embarrassing. It was so embarrassing.
Yeah.
And she was not...
Get it all out.
I expected her to kind of laugh about it and like, oh, this is a human thing that... It was just...
Anyone at reception's sense of humor was gone a long time ago.
Yeah, she's been ground down into a nub. Are you working right now or are you off on a break?
This interview... This is
work.
Some of the hardest shit I've done.
I understand. It's heavy lifting.
Certainly all day.
Yeah, of course.
I actually just finished season 5 of Sons of Anarchy.
Nice.
On a Wednesday. And on Thursday, and that was in North Hollywood, and through the miracle of Delta Airlines, on Thursday I was shooting a young indie. No, a small indie.
A young Indiana Jones filmmaker.
You're the
new
indie.
Was it a small... filmmaker with a young who was doing a young indie. Anyway, I was in New Orleans.
No.
And I was there for 2 weeks. I just got back like yesterday, and here I am with you. So I've been miraculously quite busy, which is when I'm happiest, and even more miraculously in New Orleans, which if you've never shot a movie there, dude, you know, figure it out. Get down there. Or, you know, just go down there for Jazz Fest, or just go down there and get a hotel and eat in every restaurant that they recommend you to, and take a walk on Frenchman Street. It's the coolest town in the United States. I mean, it's really like, it's not like any place I've ever been. So I've come back completely refreshed and reinvigorated and extolling the praises of that city that has taken it on the chin more times than you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, New Orleans and New York just have a fucking rough go, and they get back up and just get right back to business.
Well, I think
New Orleans is still getting back up.
Yeah,
but they're doing it.
New Orleans is still getting back up. New York is going to take a while to get back up. I have an apartment right there in the black zone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
That was blacked out. My wife sat in the dark for a week, which, you know, that neighborhood also happens to sport, you know, lots of judges and congressmen and senators, and it's a very white collar neighborhood. So I'm pretty sure that nobody in that neighborhood was prepared to like have to take a $100 taxi to 60th Street to buy bacon and eggs in the morning and
right.
get enough food to get through dinner.
Have you
and
seen?
Then, like- and then beg to charge their phone someplace and come back down. But that's kind of what my wife's like. Life was like for a week, and not that I'm complaining, because you know, people have it like that, you know, 365, 24/7. So, it's just curious that the cities with the biggest heart are the ones that keep taking it on the chin. I mean, New Yorkers are the biggest hearted people in the country, except for New Orleanders. New Orleansers, whatever the phrase is. I mean, those people are just, I mean, I have never been in a city that wears its heart on its sleeve to the degree that New Orleans does. It's the most emotionally based place in the United States. Everything is done from the heart. Everything. And I don't know. It's cool. I can't wait to get back.
Are you at the point where... I mean, do you want to write stuff or direct stuff, or do you just like performing?
I do not write except emails. I write really good emails.
Make a movie out of one.
And I write really good emails to like. I thought about that. to landlords. So if you if you ever get in trouble,
Ron, I got the script for your latest movie. It's all Amazon receipts. I don't understand it.
Wait a minute, Ron Perlman, consumer advocate. We're gonna dress you up like Hellboy and send you to knock on people's doors and be like, "How come you kicked my client out before it hit the term on his?"
You just broke the CD player.
Oh shit! I did. No, just one of them.
Okay,
the other one's fine.
All right,
the backup is still good.
Yeah, the backup one's still good.
No, you take that. Here you go. Start a new backup.
Yeah, no, it's fine. The second one's going to be fine. I don't know my own strength. I mean, you look at these guns and you go, of course, you're going to break things.
It's not what I said when I saw your guns.
When you pound on stuff.
I was like, that was weird that he broke something.
That was weird.
I saw Hulk. Did you see Hulk Hogan?
No.
He was here like at 6:15, just wandering aimlessly in the building.
Oh, I'm sure not.
Well, I'm sure he had something going on. Like
in this bastard of entertainment.
We are in the E building.
Cultural vortex.
This is really where it's all happening, Ron. This is the intersection of academia and...
Yeah, I tell you, you get to a place like this and you just, you know, you different feelings start coming up. Like, I wonder which is the best parking spot. Because that's the one I want.
Closest to the elevator, but not too close that I have to come face to face with the rabble that come in.
Right. That Mitt Romney elevator but that no one can get in but me.
That's right. The Romney-vator, which looks a lot like the Wonka-vator.
Yeah, the magic underpants actually power the elevator.
But it only goes sideways.
What?
What?
What that happens if he wins?
If what? If he went sideways?
Romney.
Oh, what happens if he wins? I'll tell you what I'll do. Turn on MSNBC and watch Chris Matthews' head explode. That's what I'll do. Vice versa. Romney wins. I mean, rather, yeah. If Obama wins, I'm going to turn on Fox News and watch their heads explode. I just love both sides of it.
You're just like watching Aftermath.
Whoever wins,
so it doesn't affect
I'll find some
way,
enjoyment in it. Of course it affects me, but you got to think of my immediate future. I got a lame duck president. I'm going to turn on MSNBC and watch their heads explode. Obama wins again. I'm going to turn on Fox. I just want to watch whoever's head explode because it's so, the opposition is so one way or the other.
It's like Bill Maher the other day said, you know, I win either way. You know, if Obama wins.
Comedy.
Of course.
If Obama wins, the country wins. If Romney wins, comedy wins.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, comedy.
What?
Comedy's always gonna win.
30 electoral votes. So is it still 154, 130, 124?
153, 123. Oh, boy. Did you vote today?
I did vote today.
Did you vote today?
I did vote today.
I didn't vote today.
You didn't?
I was stuck in this building for most of my day.
Working?
Yeah.
I had to sandwich it in between. My day started at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Before the polls opened.
I walked to what I thought was my polling place. On the way to work, and it turns out it was not my polling place.
Do you know what you could do in that case?
What's that?
A provisional ballot.
Which is what I did.
You get a provisional ballot when
I
you don't go.
I went to the polling place with the shortest line, and they said, you're not on these rolls. And I go, yeah, look again, baby. You know
really
who I am.
Doesn't have the same, and then he started the same gusto when I do it, Ron. Hey, look again, baby.
And then he started
you know
singing.
No, I didn't say that.
Ah, the stars out tonight.
I said, holy shit, what do we do? She goes, well, you go to the same polling place you went to last year. I said, last year I was in Poland. She said, do you remember where?
The land of Poles?
Anyway, I got it done. You said, with the provisional ballot.
You get a provisional ballot, and then they basically just have to fill out all your information. And,
yeah.
You know, they take your address and everything, and then they put it in a separate box. I did
vote. Well, good for you guys.
Aww. Mike Furman always had this. My buddy Mike had a theory that if you weren't going to be able to vote, you'd go out into the city and meet a guy who had exactly the opposite political views as you, and then you both agree not to vote, so you cancel each other out.
I donated money this year. I think that was I did my part. I feel like when I couldn't vote, I was like, here,
yeah,
have some money.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the American way, Matt. Just
right?
throw money at it.
That's what you do, right?
Just throw money at it. That's all you got to do.
That's why I run my house, too.
Stop crying. Here's the fiver.
That's right.
You're actually punching money into your walls.
Right. Keep these safe. Blam. Keep it inside. What do you do for fun? What do you like to do for
now
fun?
Now we're getting personal.
Yeah,
huh?
I want to get a little personal. Let's take it down.
I don't
a notch.
Have any fun.
You have fun. You're a fun-loving guy, Ron Perlman. I can see it in your eyes. You like fun.
I'm actually a little bit of an MSNBC freak.
Yeah,
I'm a political junkie, which is why I've kind of mentioned this thing now 30 or 40 times in our short time together.
Yeah.
I play some golf with the boys.
Nice.
That's my best unwind that I do. And then I work. I'm a workaholic. I'm either, you know, working on my next thing, getting it ready, or working on my last thing, or working on something as we speak. Kids are up and out of the house right now, so, you know, that was pretty time-consuming, driving them around L.A.
You put in your time, though. Now they're gone. Now you golf.
My time is, now I play some golf. Hang out with you guys.
What's your favorite course around L.A.?
Karaoke.
Sados.
There's a lot of great golf courses. My home course is Montebello. It's a public golf course.
Oh, I played there. Yeah, yeah.
In the hood.
Yep.
Yeah, it's that's my home course. It's the most blue collar golf course on earth. And then every once in a while I'll get invited to someplace, you know, really fancy. I got friends in
I don't have those friends yet.
In high places.
I worked at Bel Air Country Club all through college. I went to UCLA. And I worked everywhere on that course. I caddied. I worked in the bag room. I parked cars. I was all over that place.
You got to play there, though, right?
I did. Mondays, you could play there.
Are you a decent player?
I'm okay. You know, it's the short.
Is that always what it is? Because when I caddied, it was always Mondays. I could play Mondays.
Mondays, yeah.
In Massachusetts.
Yeah, Monday's caddies day.
Because Monday's
world,
a slow day.
The world over, because everybody's going back to work. And
yeah, I'm all right. I you know, it's always when you don't play for a while, it's the short game that goes. We
still have to have our Nerdist All-Star Golf Challenge.
I can drive the shit out of the ball, and then I get around the green, and it's like, well, there's five strokes.
Yeah.
It's a short game that you got to focus on.
And I do.
I don't have the long game either.
You don't need it, though. You don't need a long game. You just need accuracy. You just need to hit the ball straight.
I just like the beer.
Touché.
Ron, you didn't bring any clubs. No. I'm just going to ride the cart. Give me a six for that hole.
I'll be your designated
call that girl in the cart over here.
Oh, that's the best.
I'll tell you what, I'll get the first round or two.
Then we'll take it up, and then you start singing on that's the golf course. They hate it when you do that.
Everything's better if you're a little, fucked up.
Oh, man.
Everything.
When you go with Ron, there's a 19th, 20th, and 21st hole.
You always get around the 18, and you're like, that was awesome. Let's play another 18. And then you get like four holes into the second 18. And you're like, yeah, I can't. I'm done. I'm done with this shit.
I'm lucky if I make 16 these days, man.
Yeah?
I don't know. I think it's the concentration span and the knees. The knees are gone.
What'd you do to your knees?
Oh, shit. I mean, I don't even know. A couple of bad tackles.
Did you play football?
No.
Running around Vlad's place?
A lot of karaoke. Those karaoke bars can get a little rough,
I've been
especially
there.
If you sing like I do.
I'm up next. That's my Katy Perry song, you piece of shit. I'm a California girl. Fuck you, Seth MacFarlane. Don't you out Sinatra me. Fuck you.
Why don't we could get him in here. He's across the street, He's at the other courtyard building.
That doesn't mean we could get him.
I feel like we could get him.
Who else could we piss off tonight?
Everyone.
Let's see.
I don't think we've pissed off. I mean, I don't think the Romanians are going to be too happy about it, but I don't really know what our demographic is over there. It's fine. They don't know.
And they don't have pods over there.
They don't have them. They don't have them yet. They don't have the internet yet.
In Romania, U-tunes. It's an iTunes joke.
Now, actually, that was a Yakov Smirnoff joke. That was borderline Yakov Smirnoff.
He walked across the border and made the joke.
Okay.
U-tunes.
Did you...
That was pretty funny.
Thanks, Ron. That's what I do here.
You're welcome.
I'd be so intimidated if I were performing and you were sitting in the front row and you weren't laughing. You were just like, no, that was all right. I just feel like,
take what
shit.
You can get, Chris.
Did you ever mess around with live comedy at all?
First thing I ever did was stand-up comedy.
Holy shit.
I had a partner in junior high school. And we didn't feel as though we were funny enough to write material, but we felt pretty secure that we could deliver it. So we just stole from people.
And that man's name was Carlos Mencia.
Because no, he wasn't even born yet when I was doing this shit, man. The guy I really like to steal from. I mean, I stole because. The great thing is that if you're working in like discotheques where it's nothing but 16 and 17 and 18 year olds,
yeah,
you can do nothing but Henny Youngman stuff and they've never heard it before. And then if you're working at like retirement homes and stuff where all they've heard is Henny Youngman, you can do George Carlin shit, and they go, this is a revelation. Look at this kid. This kid is funny.
Ethel, there's seven words I can't say. I think cunt is one of them. Get in here.
So those are the two guys I'd like to steal from. But I'm sure this has happened to other people who tried their hand at stand-up comedy. It's terrifying. I mean, stand-up comedy is terrifying because, let's face it, you are there to get laughs. And if for some strange reason you're having a night where nothing you're doing is working, you're dying in ways that, real death would be appealing.
You are, but the great thing about it is that like when you're acting, you do a scene, you kind of go, I think that was all right. I don't know. It's got to be
that's
edited.
That's the way I like it.
You just don't want to.
I want to, denial ain't just a river in Egypt, baby.
Team effort, right, guys?
That is something my dad would say. Denial ain't just a.
Oh, see?
I love that.
I thought I could get by with on the generational thing, but you actually,
Oh, that's your dad. That's totally something my dad would say.
But that's what that was the appealing thing about acting is that if it didn't work, you didn't write it, and you know it was not personal. There was this kind of like, well, I'm doing a play.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, your taste doesn't run along those lines, you know. But comedy is just so personal. It's like you and them, and you're responsible for the good time that they're either having or not having.
Yeah.
And it was just way too difficult for me, and I didn't have the calloused mindset that one needs. You know, I don't know how guys do it, man. My hat's off to comics, because it's tough. It's tough stuff to do. Tough stuff to do well. And you're gonna have some nights. I've seen some big names have horrific nights.
Oh.
And then they start to get hostile with the audience. They start to think it's their fault that they're not being funny.
Yep.
And
well, it probably was.
Huh?
It probably was their fault, let's be honest.
There's a relationship that you form, and sometimes when you get...
No, I actually watched somebody who I adore, who shall remain nameless. And she... Okay, there's a hint.
Was it Sarah?
Holy shit. How did you know? Is that obvious? It's either her or Joan Rivers, right?
There was either... Well, no.
Could have been Rita Rudner.
No, it's just that... Rita Rudner.
I was in Vegas in 87.
It was... No, Sarah's one of the funniest people I know. One of the funniest and I think most innovative comics I know. But I've seen her have rough sets in crowds where people didn't understand what she was doing and took her literally. Like, why would she say those things? And they get, you know, I haven't seen it happen in years, but I have seen crowds get hostile with her.
Well, it wasn't Sarah.
Oh,
so there.
Fuck.
But, no, Sarah, I didn't say that. But anyway, yeah, it was somebody like that, and it was a situation just like that, and it was I was in the audience, and you know I was there to fucking adore this person,
Joy Behar,
because I do love this person's comedy, and I'm going, holy shit, what you just said, fucking bombed,
yeah,
and then she compounded it, you know, like to the fourth power, like everything, and it got worse and worse and worse, and then she started like taking it out on these poor people who, you know, all they want to do is love her.
Well, but when you get to that crossroads and you're like, okay, this is not going well. So I have one of two choices. I can either just take a hard left and just move on to something else and see, or I can commit really hard, and maybe committing really hard, like people, like something about that'll be funny. And then, but then that's it. Like once you're committed to that, if it doesn't bail you out, you are in a vast hole.
But you got to have a go-to, like a surefire joke.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying out new material and you get to about the fourth joke and it's starting to feel like awake.
Right.
Then you got to go. So two guys walk into a bar, you know. An Irishman,
Ron Perlman and Seth MacFarlane.
I've seen that not work too. I mean, that's just awful. When you just do,
you know
the,
what? It
like,
just
you
happens.
See someone do the, like, their closer like, yeah, early, and then it's like, what is going on?
It just happens. Like, yeah, sometimes you just don't connect with the crowd, and that's all there is.
But this is why before, Chris, I can't be in comedy, is because I don't, I couldn't have that as my
life. Do you
life.
Take that stuff, do you take it pretty hard?
I took it really hard when shit didn't work. I mean, you know, when it did work, and, you know, you're just like, you know, the notion of holding an audience in the palm of your hand, you know, regardless of what it is you're doing, but particularly with comedy, because the response is so immediate and so vociferous, it's like an aphrodisiac.
I mean,
you know, it's a powerful feeling. And I think that that's probably, you know, what I discovered that first play I did in high school was like, okay, you know, there's the rehearsal process, you know, which is where we're discovering this shit and we're figuring out what'll I do here and how will I, and then you eventually, you know, put a string of some shit together, and then all of a sudden, you know, all the lights go out and there's 1,000 people in the audience, and you're gonna do this shit that you've been rehearsing for a few weeks, and you have no idea how it's gonna go, and it starts to go well, and you start to feel that you are controlling 1,000 people. You're taking them on highs, and you can feel it palpably, and you're taking them on lows, and every once in a while you're getting a laugh, and you can feel it, and you can hear it, and all of a sudden, and you get 2 hours of that on the stage, and, you know, there's no drug that can kind of stand up to that.
Yeah, have you tried heroin? It's pretty great.
Well, you know, well, you...
That's probably why, you know, performers get into drugs, is because they just get addicted.
Chasing the high.
They get addicted to the high.
Well, I can tell, I mean, what tends to happen, and I mean, I don't know what it's like. I feel like it's like this for a lot of comics, but especially if you're doing like 6 or 7 shows in a weekend and you go up on stage and you just sort of give the show every bit of energy that you have, and it's so much about like putting stuff out there and trying to make people happy and connect with the crowd, and then when it's all over, you're just alone and just empty because you've just taken all of your energy and just thrown it out into the world, and you just sort of feel weirdly isolated sometimes afterwards. It's really bizarre, and you just kind of feel empty, and there's a like, I need to feel okay again. And I think that's why, you know.
There's also a loneliness to it. I mean, aside from what you're saying, which is, you know, totally true, that your output is stuff that you're almost left with nothing. It's so intense, you know, the amount that you're putting out in order to make, you know, sustain that level of whatever it is that's going to take you through that show. But there's this other part of it where if you just were like Babe Ruth, or like, you know, Eli Manning, where you just like everything you looked at just went over the fence, or, you know, into the end zone or whatever like that. It was like this magical thing. No one that you try to describe that to is going to understand what the fuck you're talking about.
I guess that's
so
true.
You've just had like the greatest acid trip of your life, and you have you can't even share it with even your old lady,
yeah,
or, you know, or your best friend, because they have no concept of what just happened in that exchange between you and those 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And so that's a kind of an isolationism and a loneliness that's heavyweight shit. That's why I want to. My first instinct after something like that, you know, God willing, you know, there's been a few nights like that, you know, where you just went, holy shit, that was trippy, man. That was trippy. Is like, where's the bar, man? I gotta have a drink,
yeah,
or 7.
Well, that's why so many of us either become complete alcoholics or get into drugs or have to quit.
I mean, no one in this room, but
where is Jonah?
Right. I don't know where Jonah is anyway. By the way,
where is she?
Can you watch your films in a theater full of people? Is it an analogous experience?
I'm not. I don't. That's not my favorite thing to do. I do not enjoy watching my own work, period. And I certainly don't enjoy watching it in a room full of people, especially when it's for the first time and I have no idea whether it's going to turn out good or not.
And halfway you want to sit up and go, okay, that's it. Okay, good. Yeah, got it.
I have done that.
Really?
I have absconded. There's been nights like this where, you know, you're in the middle of the fourth row, and you got to get the fuck out of there. And it's like, excuse me. Wait a minute, that's you on scene.
Yeah,
sorry, I gotta pee.
Forever.
And, you know. Taxi!
Can we just
said taxi in the middle of a movie theater.
And then the taxi drives through the wall. And just that's how bad he wants to get out. That's so bad. Yeah, I don't know. I don't... I haven't really done enough movies to really know. I've done a couple, and I'm always like, hey, look how big my face is. But it doesn't really...
It's weird. You say that a lot, just what? In general. Look how big my face is.
I do. Just wanted
Am I swollen?
As big as possible. I have a face boner. It was fun to watch you, because I did the Pac Rim panel at Comic-Con in San Diego this year, and the...
Oh, right.
Yeah. And it was really fucking fun to it. That's an experience that's different than doing stand-up, because you're going out where people are just ready no matter what. They're just happy to be there, and they're ready to love, and they're ready, you know, they're just excited, and you're showing them stuff they haven't, that no one else has seen. They're seeing Pac Rim footage in this case, and they see you.
But I mean, that's the biggest fucking blowjob in the world, Comic-Con, is because...
I've been doing it wrong.
Dude, I mean, you know, if you're down there to celebrate something that is in their wheelhouse, like a Guillermo del Toro movie, for instance,
yeah,
or something else that's a bona fide hit, or that's got so much hype that it's, I mean, they are there to hang on your every word, and you basically can't fuck that up.
Right,
that's not like giving a performance. That's like just getting this cosmic blowjob hug.
I've seen people fuck it up before.
Cosmic blowjob hug.
That's the name of your fucking Sinatra cover album. Cosmic blowjob
you
hug.
You and the night and the music. Hey. Fill me with hugs and desire. Blowjob. Blowjob.
I've never... That's that. You just used to sing.
Shut up, let him sing.
Yeah. I'll step on the bit.
I want to see how far this song's going to go. We're about to get the cosmic blowjob hug song. He was just getting to the chorus, man. He hadn't even hit the bridge.
Right, no, man.
I'm just still stunned. I've never heard like Comic-Con described perfectly in three words.
A cosmic blowjob hug.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's not like getting up on stage and having to prove yourself, because you've already... They're down there to... The appreciation level is through the roof.
It's amazing.
Before you say anything. And you're not really on stage long enough to blow it.
Right.
I mean, you know.
I have seen people fuck it up before, though. And they fuck it up by not appreciating it. Like, if they seem, you know, if they take it for granted or whatever, I think the audience they're very forgiving about a lot of things. But if they feel like you're taking their time for granted, or you don't appreciate the position you're in, or that they're there to celebrate, they will turn. And I've seen people do it, and it's kind of sickly fun to watch.
Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver was amazing. She was amazing.
I'm sure she was.
No, I don't
that
know.
Trupa.
I don't know if I
did
have
a
any
movie
examples.
With Sigourney.
Which movie?
Alien Resurrection.
Alien Resurrection, of course. Oh,
I was the erection.
You.
Oh, Ron, we sent you the wrong pages. That's a different movie. That's the porn parody we've already put into production.
This ain't Alien Resurrection.
Jared for Kyle, ladies and gentlemen.
Kyle. What was your contribution? Oh, yes. You can come in and say one thing, and then you have to go back to your seat.
The one thing I've wanted to say when I saw you on the list is you fucking own an Alien Resurrection.
Oh, thanks.
Such a good role. Like, that's my favorite.
I like how he stops at saying movie. He just says role.
Well, we've got this movie you own in that movie. Like, I've literally watched with people and just go, look how fucking good Perlman is in this movie. Also, aliens that swim. That's all. Thank you, America.
That's right.
Thank you, America.
What is that alien doing in my soup? The backstroke. The backstroke.
Cut, Ron. Stop improvising.
Why?
This is an
Why
alien
are we back
movie?
To Henny Youngman?
And they all start having a meeting with Sigourney.
My
like,
wife
Ron.
Says, take me someplace I've never been. I took her to the kitchen.
Cut, Ron. Again, there are aliens that are attacking.
Aliens got to have wives, right?
Take my alien, please. Come on. Come on, guys. Take my HR Geiger. That's pretty awesome.
I just joined the Twitterverse.
Oh, you did? Are you at Ron Perlman?
No, I'm at Pearl Mutations.
Pearl Mutations!
Yeah, that's I couldn't get at Ron Perlman because there's another guy going around saying he's Ron Perlman.
Son of a bitch. It's probably Seth MacFarlane.
As you can imagine. Probably the motherfucker.
I could be Hellboy. I could be Hellboy.
First he thinks he can do French Foreign Legion better than me, and now this.
Hey, I'm a Hellboy over there. What are you doing over there? Hey, I'm a government. They found me. I got a key for an arm.
No, because Seth, it's terrible.
That's pretty good. That's really good. That's really good. Where were we?
I don't know. I just
I joined Twitter, and my first It's very important what your first tweet is. Don't you think?
It really is.
Because that's your kind of a, you know, that's how the world is going to probably remember you for until your second tweet.
Yep.
At least. Here was mine. Two cannibals are eating a clown. One says, "Does he taste funny to you?" That was my first, my opening tweet.
Hashtag violin.
Let me say it again. Two cannibals are eating a clown.
Okay, so they're cannibals.
You get it? Does he taste funny to you?
I don't understand.
That's why I have 7 followers.
He means gamey, right? Human flesh is gamey.
It's a little gamey.
And the portions are so small.
Oh, that's a great Portland accent. I love having you on the show. I really want to have you back on the show again. Well, but Packrin comes out next summer.
Yes, it does.
It'd be fun to have you come back on and just fuck around. I mean, you don't have to come on for any reason.
No, we can just shoot the shit. Like,
you're Ron that. Fucking Perlman. You can come on whenever you want.
I don't think we. I think we did the opposite of plug shit of mine. I'm pretty sure I lost viewership. If anybody listens to this podcast...
You know, Sons of Anarchy had me when they put the gun to the baby's head, and they lost me with this podcast.
It's like, Perlman doesn't want... If Perlman isn't going to plug his own stuff, why should I give a fuck about it?
Exactly.
You had me, Perlman, and you lost me.
The best internet picture in the world, though.
You'll never see me on Letterman because of that.
Really?
Never.
That's so weird.
He would have Fred Travellina on,
Katie
but not
Sagal
you.
Gets Letterman, I get podcasts.
you're saying that like it's a bad thing.
I'm not saying it like.
Hey,
it's a
we'll
bad
have
thing.
You know, Katie has canceled on us twice already.
So
I can't talk like this on Letterman.
No, you can't. No, you can't.
Two cannibals are eating a clown.
Out. Does clown pussy taste funny to you? I always make it dirty.
Two cannibals eating a clown, and I'll be Paul Schaefer.
Two cannibals eating a clown.
Ah!
Didn't get to the punchline yet. I've never liked you.
I get it. They're because clowns are funny.
You're not even listening.
Ah!
You're not even fucking listening. Why am I doing this?
Just want to say I'll be at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame benefit.
What's it benefiting?
You know, rock and roll.
Jesus Christ.
Ah! That's my Paul Schaefer.
You guys don't need guests.
We don't have them for a lot of shows.
I've never felt more superfluous in my life.
You feel how I normally do.
I've been wanting to get that word in a sentence.
That's good. Making dreams come true.
Here we are, one dream at a time.
Ron, welcome to Ron Perlman's Vocabulary Dreams. It'd be fun to have you just do a show where you come on and you define a word, and then that's it. That's the whole show. Mm. What other words do you like? What else?
Motherfucker.
Mm.
Love that word. That's probably my number one favorite word. Motherfucker.
What is your favorite?
And when
what is it
if,
noise?
If God exists, and you get to the pearly gates, what would you like to hear him say?
Perlman on Lipton.
I would like to hear him say, James Lipton is over there.
James Lipton is down there.
Motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
So you're at...
Is Hellboy in there? Can we talk to Hellboy?
At Permutations? Sons of Anarchy? Mm-hmm. When's the new season of Sons of Anarchy?
We're dead in the middle of screening season 5 right now, which... gets us almost to Christmas, and that's the end of season 5. We've already finished filming season 5, so we're about to go on a very long hiatus because we only do 13 episodes.
And we can only take so much Joel McHale. Seriously,
that's right. He's got a few million Twitter followers.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
He's okay. That guy.
He's doing okay.
And so I now begin a 7-month hiatus. The show will once season 5 airs, you will not see season 6 until next September.
Shit.
So yeah, there's a lot of downtime, but the good news is that I get to do things like Pacific Rim and stuff like that in the off season.
Good.
So I spice it up a little bit with some variety.
You can't. Are you? Can you slow down for 5 minutes, or you need to keep moving?
I can slow down for about five, and then my wife starts to go, "Did something die in here?" Really, she does. She does. She goes. She, nobody likes to see me around the house. So I, as luck would have it, I like staying busy.
Okay.
It depends. It depends. Last hiatus, I did nothing except 2 weeks on Pacific Rim. But for 7 months, I basically just worked on my tan line.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to see it?
You got some color. Let's see that. Oh, look at that.
You know.
That's a copper tone girl.
Put on 35 pounds.
Of muscle or fun?
Of course of muscle. And they just tried to dodge TMZ.
Oh, did they follow? Did they chase you around?
I happen to go to the restaurants that they like to hang out in front of, you know.
Like the TMZ Cafe.
There's a lot of stuff of me on YouTube waiting for my car at valet parking.
Celebrities are just like us. They have to get around with a vehicle, too.
I feel like you'd be bothered less if you just parked your own car. Because they're all waiting outside the valet.
But they're going to follow me. They'll be like, Ron Perlman parks his own car. Things aren't going well. Like, they'll always spin it in a shitty way. There's nothing you can do.
No, but if they want to put, you know, me, 2.5 minutes of me standing there waiting for my car on YouTube, hey, that's what makes American culture great, I guess.
Well, you got to drop the C-bomb like 10 times when you're talking to them.
Oh, they'd put that on the front page. I guess they would.
Yes, they would.
What's his name, that guy?
Harvey Levin.
Harvey Levin.
Yeah.
Harvey Levin. Upstanding.
Yep.
Upstanding fellow.
Just standing there behind that thing with a sippy cup.
Always got to have something to drink.
I'm sure I'm going to get stalked for saying this shit here. let's get Perlman. Mm.
Did you hear that? He made fun of us. Attack! TMZ! Unite and attack! You want to take us out with a song?
These little town Jews. That's it. That's
Wait a minute. That's just a couple of words.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Little towns don't have Jews.
little towns in Romania do. Not many.
Also, Ron Perlman's Cosmic Blowjob Hug will be available on iTunes.
Available at the fx.network.com.
Available at your Sam Goody
Megastore.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
It's good to see you, man.
This is fun.
Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Nerdist for a $110 bonus offer, including a digital scale and $55 of free postage. That's Stamps.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist.